Welcome to Great Chicago Stories, copyright 2007 by the Chicago History Museum. Visit us online at greatchicagostories.org. Made possible by a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. It's a long way from home. Lewis's heart skipped a beat as the train slowed to a halt. He stood on tiptoe, straining to see beyond the sea of heads in front of him. His fellow travelers pushed him impatiently to get a look. Lewis tried in vain not to push the people in front of him. Suddenly, the door opened. The push from the people behind Lewis was so great he hardly had to put his foot on a step. He was carried down the steps and onto the platform of Central Station in the big, bustling city of Chicago in the great northern state of Illinois. He'd heard about this station. It was the entry to a new way of life for young men like himself. Central Station was the door to his future, and for Lewis, it symbolized the chance to be something other than a sharecropper like his parents and grandparents before him. It was a chance to see something of the great big world outside of Mississippi. It was a chance to spread his wings. It was a chance for freedom. Lewis looked up and down the platform for his cousin, Robert. He had only seen him once before when they were kids. "Hey, hey, over here, Lewis, I'm over here," Robert shouted. He looked and acted the same. Sparkling eyes and the big, welcoming smile. Lewis shyly held out his hand, but Robert grabbed him and hugged him. Lewis noticed Robert's suit. It was new. His pants were pleated, the lapels were wide, and his shoes were shiny. Lewis shifted his weight from side to side. He adjusted his collar and tugged at the sleeves of his suit coat. There were new leather patches on the elbows, but Lewis couldn't help but feel that they were a signal to the world that the suit had been worn by his father and brother before him. His mother had always reassured him that he didn't need a lot of clothes, just a bar of soap to make him clean and presentable. But his mother wasn't on the platform looking at his nattily attired cousin. Robert exclaimed, "You daydreaming or what? Come on, Aunt Celia told me I had to bring you home right away, because I've got to show you your new home. She's worried about her little grandnephew coming to the big, bad city for the first time. But don't worry about her. I'll just tell her your train got in late." Lewis could hardly keep track of Robert's excited talk as he jumped from subject to subject. One second, it was Aunt Celia. The next, it was Lewis's future. "We'll get you all set up," Robert assured him. "Maybe you can find a job in a hotel or in the stockyards where my dad and I work. No matter what happens, I'll tell you, the year is 1922 and being here is better than milking some cows and chasing chickens." Lewis suddenly felt excited at the thought of work in a big city. He didn't want to be a sharecropper. He didn't want to raise crops on farmland that didn't belong to him. He got angry whenever his father gave the landlord not only rent, but also a share of their crops they'd worked so hard to harvest. Robert led the way out of Central Station, one step ahead of Lewis. He pointed to the tall buildings downtown north of the station. Then, with a wave of his hand to the left or to the right, Robert talked about the exciting world of the South Side. Lewis had never seen anything like it. In Mississippi, the folks he knew hardly owned anything except the clothes on their backs. But here, there were restaurants, flower shops, drugstores, with all black customers. What impressed Lewis even more was that Robert told him that this was an area in the city where blacks owned most of the businesses, too. Robert led Lewis to his home. The small wooden cottage was a few blocks west of the grand, stately gray and brownstone homes on South Park Avenue. Robert's house was one of the many little cottages on a neat and tidy street. Once inside, and after a warm welcome from Robert's parents, Lewis met his great-aunt Celia for the first time. "Humph," she said, as she looked Lewis up and down. "You seem like a nice young man. You stand straight and you know your manners. Keep it that way. I don't want you getting into trouble. I'll be watching you." "Yes, ma'am," Lewis said as Robert looked exasperated. Aunt Celia turned and glared at Robert. "And I don't want to hear any of that fancy talk coming out of your mouth, Robert. All I know is I don't want to know where you are picking it up." "What fancy talk?" Lewis wondered. His cousin seemed pretty normal to him. After dinner, Lewis and Robert headed straight to Robert's room where they would both be sleeping. Lewis started to take off his shoes, but Robert apparently had other plans. He strode over to the window, opened it, and put his leg over the sill. "I'll see you later, Lewis. Aunt Celia can really bring me down with all her none of that fancy talk, Robert. She's going to make me snap my cap. I got to split." Snap my cap? Bring me down? Split? Lewis had no idea what Robert was saying. Was this the fancy talk to which Aunt Celia referred? Robert threw his other leg over the sill. Lewis looked out the window in time to see Robert land with a thump. He ran out of the yard and turned and waved, and he laughed as he ran away from the house. On Lewis's second day in Chicago, Robert pulled him aside. "I know you're planning to start to look for work, you being such a good boy and all, but tonight you're coming with me. You didn't leave that farm just to hang around with these old folks. You and me are going for a walk along the Stroll." Wherever they were going, Lewis was sure Aunt Celia would not approve. After dinner, Robert and Lewis went to Robert's room. "Come on, we got to catch a streetcar." Robert threw his legs over the sill and jumped. Lewis had no idea what Robert was talking about, but his stomach felt like it had a butterfly and a knot in it at the same time. Lewis jumped and ran right behind Robert. They took the streetcar headed north to 35th and State Street. Robert explained to him that this is where the nightlife of the South Side was. "You haven't heard or seen anything till you have been on the Stroll." The Stroll. Lewis had read about it in the Chicago Defender, but had never dreamed that such a place really existed. There were movie theaters, vaudevilles, cabarets. The sidewalks were teeming with people walking shoulder to shoulder. You could have ice cream in a fancy shop called a parlor, or could eat chili or something as exotic as chop suey in a restaurant. There were lots of guys and girls. Everyone was whooping it up and laughing. And the light. There weren't just street lights like Lewis thought there would be in the city. The signs of the cabarets, the vaudevilles, and movie theaters were surrounded by little round bulbs, illuminating the pleasures to be found inside. It was so bright, it was like the middle of day at midnight. The buildings where people lived were all brick. One building was next to the other, and one floor was stacked on top of the one below. But the most amazing thing was the sound he heard coming out of some apartments. It wasn't the slow, sad blues he was used to hearing back home. This music was running fast and was getting ready to go faster. There were banjos, a piano, and horns. Lewis recognized the sounds of a banjo strumming, but he had never heard the brassy sounds of the saxophone and cornet. The piano sounded like someone was rolling his fingers up and down the keys, and suddenly a horn would burst on the scene and take the music in another direction. Robert looked at Lewis and said, "Boy, close your mouth. Try not to look like what you really are, a farm boy. We are going into this building here. We are going to blow it down." Inside the apartment, young men and women were dancing and laughing. Lewis remembered Aunt Celia pointing her finger at him and telling him to be a good boy. He didn't see anybody over the age of 25. A guy came up to Robert and put out his hand. "Hand me that skin, Robert. Listen to this record of the King Oliver's Creole Jazz Band. Old Satchel Mouth is really laying down some hot licks." He pointed at Lewis's hat. "What kind of lid is that?" Lewis could feel the blood rushing to his face. The hat was rumpled along the edges. He took the hat off. "Don't pay any attention to him," Robert said. "He's my cousin from Mississippi. Pay up, Lewis. Put some cash in that hat over there." Money? Lewis wondered why he should put money in the hat. Robert saw the bewildered look on his face and leaned over and said, "It's a rent party. We get to hear the newest jazz record by the King Oliver's Creole Jazz Band, have some gig of water, and meet some girls. In return, we help the guy pay his rent. It's no big deal. It happens all the time. Some rent parties have guys playing real pianos. Just put some money in the hat and start enjoying yourself. Gig of water?" He meant to have some alcohol. Robert talked and danced until 2 a.m. Lewis watched him and talked a little to some other young men, but stayed far away from the young women. He was too nervous to talk to them. He'd never socialized with young women without a chaperone before. Robert and Lewis took a streetcar back home and climbed in the window and fell right to sleep. The next morning, Aunt Celia was in rare form. She was shaking and pointing her index finger straight up at Lewis, who was at least a foot taller than she. "I know I can't walk up these stairs with this bad leg, but I am pretty sure you two were not in that room last night. Where did you go? Lewis, I told you I was going to keep an eye on you. Robert, where did you two go? If I find out you are trying to corrupt this boy, why, I am going to tell your father when he gets home." Robert looked at Aunt Celia with his big brown eyes. "Oh, Aunt Celia, you are right. We weren't in our room." Lewis's throat plunged down into his stomach. "We just walked down to the next block to see Thomas and Michael and their sisters. You know, we're old enough to take care of ourselves. Can't we just visit some friends?" She looked at Robert suspiciously. "Thomas had better have been with you. I don't want you visiting any girls without a chaperone." With that, she walked away, shaking her head and muttering about how times had changed. The last thing Lewis wanted was for his uncle to find out that they had been on the stroll. Robert looked at Lewis and winked. Tonight, we're going to go to a club. After dinner, the cousins jumped out the window and headed for the streetcar again. As they walked down State Street north of 26th Street, Lewis could see the glow from all the lights from the stroll. He could feel his heart beating. He was more excited and less nervous than the night before. What would a club be like? Lewis wondered. We're going to the Lincoln Gardens. It's a black and tan club up north on 31st Street, Robert explained. Lewis was getting used to Robert's way of talking, but black and tan was a new expression. Robert told Lewis the Lincoln Gardens was the largest dance hall on the South Side. Lewis thought it was one of the most handsome buildings he'd seen on the South Side. Inside, there was a large crystal ball hanging over the dance floor that had small pieces of glass on it. There were spotlights that shone on the ball and made the whole dance floor sparkle. To Lewis's astonishment, he soon found out that black and tan meant blacks and whites both went to the club. While Robert and Lewis took a seat in one section, there were white people their age sitting in another. There was a floor show on the dance floor where a master of ceremonies instructed the customers to stay in their seats while black dancers stepped this way and that, showing the customers the steps to a dance. Then the dancers got faster and faster. All Lewis could think was that Aunt Celia would definitely have not approved of how they were dancing. They were shaking their hips, twisting and jumping. Their feet were moving as fast as their arms. Then the master of ceremonies instructed people to gather on the dance floor. Robert ran to the dance floor and tried to drag Lewis with him. There was no way Lewis felt he was going to go, but he watched as Robert and a young woman danced right next to a young white couple. Lewis could not believe his eyes. Something like that would never have happened in Mississippi. If a couple was getting too close, like Robert did once, the master of ceremonies came on over and told the couple to keep it moving. The master of ceremonies did an okay job of keeping people in line, but Aunt Celia would have done better, Lewis thought to himself. The dance floor was packed and hopping at the same time. Finally, Lewis couldn't take it anymore. His foot was tapping to the beat and his body swaying to the rhythm. He had to dance. A young lady, sitting at a table nearby, had looked at him a few times. Lewis thought she might have what Robert would call a crush. Finally, he got the nerve to ask her to dance. She practically jumped out of her seat and ran to the dance floor. They danced one dance and then another. Lewis made sure to keep his distance and not get too close. After a couple of hours, Lewis grabbed Robert's arm. "We've got to get back before sunrise," Robert agreed. As they walked away from the stroll toward the streetcar stop, Robert put his arm around Lewis. "Well, what do you think?" Lewis laughed and said, "Well, it's a long way from home."